Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
The Greens get trashed in Europe elections. Yeah, great update here from Stephen Moore with the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. Of course, Steve Moore, you might remember him when he was a Wall Street Journal editorial board member. He was also a 2016 Trump economic advisor. Now he's got the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. I think Art Laffer and several other key folks are a part of that. But the Greens get trashed in Europe elections. Hopefully this is a sign of what's to come here in the American elections as well, because we know that the Greens, these radical environmental activists, that's basically what you could call the Democrat Party today, the Greens. I mean, they pushed this radical agenda time and time again. They killed Colstrip 1 and 2. Now they're trying to kill Colstrip 3 and 4. And as we heard Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy point out in that debate highlight that I shared with you in the 6 o'clock hour, if they shut down Colstrip, if they kill Colstrip, they're going to shut down important jobs in Butte, Montana as well. Look, John Tester, he votes against the Keystone XL pipeline, kicks a bunch of union workers to the curb. The guy has failed to stand up for Colstrip, as the Greens in his party, the Greens are his biggest backers every single election. He puts these green liberal federal judges on the bench, including in Butte, Montana, that rules against mining, that rules against oil, gas, and coal. You don't think eventually that's going to lead to the shutdown of union jobs in Butte, Montana? Of course that's eventually what is out there on the horizon. But anyway, the Greens get trashed in Europe elections. Europe was supposed to be at the epicenter of global climate change action, but now the voters are revolting against higher prices, lower living standards, and economies that have stalled out, Stephen Moore writes. Over 200 million Europeans across 27 countries voted in elections for 720 members of the European Parliament over the weekend, and the result was a stinging defeat for the left and the Green parties. Let's see. CNBC characterized this as a result of the far right. That's untrue. It was a revolt of normal working class people, and especially young European voters who are facing a bleak future of low growth, higher taxes, and fewer jobs. What's scary is that the most radical climate change government in the world today is in Washington, D.C. So the Greens get trashed in the Europe elections. Let's hope the Greens get trashed here in the American elections as well. By the way, a related story. We know that these radical Green New Deal activists like Joe Biden and John Tester, that are also spending massive amounts of your taxpayer dollars, are driving up the cost of everything. Restaurants in particular have been struggling because of massive inflation from Joe Biden and John Tester. Fox News reporting this morning that more restaurants will close nationwide over higher prices. A recent analysis from Fox News Digital broke down the dramatically rising fast food prices. They point out that a Big Mac used to cost $3.99 in 2019. Now the price has more than doubled to $8.29. So there you go. Thanks to the Greens.
This is Poll Parade with Fox News Director of Polling, Dana Blandon.
Everyone is tracking Nevada in this year's presidential race. While it only has 6 electoral votes, that understates its importance. The last time Nevada went for a Republican was George W. Bush in 2004. But in 2020, Joe Biden won it by only 2.5 percentage points. And our new Fox News survey of Nevada registered voters shows it could be tough to keep it blue. Donald Trump is ahead by 5 points in a head-to-head matchup, 50% to Biden's 45. Within the margin of error, but half of voters there say it feels like they are falling behind financially, including 6 in 10 independents and 3 in 10 Democrats. And by a wide margin, 16 points, Nevada voters believe Trump would do a better job than Biden on the economy. One more item we're tracking. Union households, an important group in Nevada. Biden won them by 15 points in 2020. Now they favor him by just 1. I'm Dana Blanton, and that's your Poll Parade.
Here's a look at your real weather for Billings and Bozeman. With mainly sunny conditions across the area for today, high temperature readings will stay around 87 from Bozeman to Billings. For tonight, clear and quiet, with low temperature readings back to around 59 degrees. And the outlook for Wednesday does call for more sunshine, with high temperature readings rebounding back up in the mid-80s across the region tomorrow. This is Weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, great to have Brian Massard out of Dillon, Montana, with Reminisce Angus back with us here for a few minutes. Brian, how you been? Great to have you back on the program.
Well, I'm doing really good. Good to be here, Aaron.
I'm doing good. I'm a little disappointed with our friend Russell Nimitz, though. He's driving to Miles City. Didn't offer to give me a ride. Didn't want me to tag along, I guess. So, but that's all right. I got to see you in Miles City recently, so that's good.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good visit.
Yeah. Hey, so this was kind of cool. The other day, I was chatting with a friend of mine, and he was, I won't share his name. You know, I didn't ask for permission to on that front, but. He said he's doing this. He heard about it through like Joe Rogan. He's doing this carnivore diet. And basically, he says if it ain't water and if it doesn't come from an animal, I ain't eating it. And he said it's been doing some pretty good things for him. And I was like, wow, that's crazy, because I was like, that's basically what Brian Massard has been talking about. Look, you want that animal fat. You want the beef. You don't just want the beef and the meat. You want that animal fat too.
Absolutely. It is. People have been told for 70 years that it is bad for them, it is a danger, and it's going to cause disease and ailments. And interesting that you brought that up, because we're down here in Jackson, Wyoming, and we had the opportunity to talk to Nicole Shanahan last night for 5 hours, RFK's running mate. Her vice president. And you know, we've just heard several things. We've listened to him on several things on talking about, you know, in America, 60% of Americans suffer from chronic illness. And the Medicaid and Medicare budgets are 5 times what the military budgets are. And he said it's just completely out of control, and we're not going to get this debt paid off until we get people healthy. And I was like, well, ding, ding, ding. Here's the first presidential candidate is actually talking about healing people instead of just bickering over, I'm going to get the cheapest prescription drugs. And so we got to talk to them about cattle, the environment, and tie in saturated fat specifically to the debt, to Medicare, to Medicaid, to 60% of Americans being chronically ill because they're missing saturated fat in their diets, and the pharmaceutical companies are replacing them with pills. And we're not going to recover if we don't change that. So what an opportunity for Montana ranchers and ranchers across the country, people eating animals, to get that dialogue changed around. And they were not aware of the saturated fat thing, but I definitely think you're going to start hearing that for the first time out of a presidential candidate. And what an opportunity to change ranching in Montana.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because, you know, RFK, you know, questioning all the COVID mandates, certainly his questioning of the COVID vax, I think really opened eyes for a lot of people. And so, yeah, I think he will have a voice when it comes to this topic as well. So that's good to hear. Tell me about in particular why, you know, especially that little bit of fat that you get, say, like you've got really good beef jerky, the Reminisce Angus jerky. I saw it at the Livingston Town, got some at the Livingston Town Pump, for example, or if people order your beef. I mean, there is something about that little bit of fat that's in there that's good. But how do people find your products in particular?
So the best way to get it, if you don't live in Dillon, Montana or Helena, you've got to order it online at remangusbeef.com. Other than that, the town pumps across Montana are starting to fill up with it. If they don't have it, if you have your favorite little grocery store, if they don't have it, ask for it. We've been selling out this last month. We made it through a long, cold winter. It's starting to pick up again. But lots of the town pumps and some smaller convenience stores Montana, all the way to Billings, have got it in the stores now.
Yeah, that's great. And what were you doing down in Jackson? Were you there for an ag event, a stock growers event, or was it because of this opportunity you had to link up with RFK's running mate?
Just specifically got invited to come down to talk to Nicole Shanahan. They're traveling around the country visiting with ag and saying what's the holdup in ag, what's the red tape in ag, what needs to happen. Because, you know, you listen to him, he said he has the ability to get these agencies, and I know Trump tried to when he was in there, and we met with all his secretaries that involved agriculture, and they tried, but they didn't really understand how to do it, and the bureaucrats that run the country, which I believe that's who runs the country, are still in there, they're back in there. We saw very little change, and what change we did see got wiped out, and so these guys are very serious about, we know how to get in there, but we have to hear from agriculture. What is the red tape? What is the hurdle? So we talked about the dietary guidelines. They have known for 60 years that saturated fat is good, and not one time in history has it ever caused an illness. And these guys will probably bring that to the forefront and get that changed, get those guidelines changed. And there's no money in healthy people, Aaron. There's no money. There's pharmaceutical companies, the agencies, the heart associations, the diabetes associations. All those donors dry up when people get healthy.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think this is really interesting too, because I think what, you know, if RFK's team is jumping in on this, I think this is a sign that that if we get change in the White House, you know, Trump back in there, I think more voices added into the table like RFK, et cetera, on what we needed to do to bring about massive reform to our government, and especially on the ag front. I mean, right now under the Biden administration, we've got, you know, radical eco-terrorists like Tracy Stone Manning running the Bureau of Land Management and giving special favors to these environmental activists like the American Prairie Reserve and others. But we've got an opportunity to finally bring innovation and some much-needed reform to these agencies coming soon. Brian, if you want to, stand by. I'll come back to you with some final thoughts here after the break and after our Farm and Ranch report. And then I've got another guest joining us right after that, Yellowstone County District Judge Jessica Fair, coming up after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
Wyoming has now joined the list of states with highly pathogenic avian influenza infection in dairy cattle. The Wyoming Livestock Board and Department of Agriculture received confirmation late last week that the highly pathogenic avian influenza had been found in a dairy cattle herd in Wyoming. The National Veterinary Service Laboratory confirmed the infection, the first case of HPAI, in a Wyoming dairy farm. Wyoming State Veterinarian Hallie Hassel says the Livestock Board is encouraging all dairy producers to closely monitor their herd and contact veterinarians immediately if their cattle are symptomatic. The department also reiterated that dairies are required to ensure that only milk from healthy animals enters the food supply chain. In other news, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has condemned a recently announced Department of Defense-sponsored research grant that would fund the development of lab-grown meat products by a biotechnology manufacturing company called BioMade to feed American troops. NCBA says it's outraged that the Department of Defense is spending millions of taxpayer dollars to feed America's heroes like lab rats. They say U.S. cattle producers raise the highest quality beef in the world with the lowest carbon footprint, and American troops in all branches deserve to get that same wholesome natural meat and not the ultra-processed lab-grown protein that is cooked up in a chemical-filled bioreactor. NCBA says America's troops deserve better. I'm Lane Nordland.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
That's right. Lane Nordland said it. America's troops deserve better. Give them real meat, real beef. That's what we want. I can tell you firsthand experience. In fact, I'll tell you, one of the best things you can send to our troops overseas in a care package is beef jerky. One of the best things you can send, because it doesn't matter whether you're on a mission, whether you're training, whether you're stuck manning the radio, Good old beef jerky, the best snack you can get. Ain't that right, Brian Massard with Reminisce Angus? You've got jerky and much more. Brian, you know, first off, thanks for sticking around. I wanted to get some final thoughts from you. And I don't know, maybe this is a good place to kind of wrap. The Greens got trashed in the European elections. And I think what really drove that was their attacks on agriculture, carbon taxes, gas taxes, deliberately targeting farmers and ranchers. They were hostile to beef in particular. And so it's good to see the European people rejecting that craziness. But it's the same type of craziness they're pushing here in America.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the kind of maybe one of the highest points of the conversation yesterday is Nicole had said, you know, agriculture, protecting agriculture is our number one priority in this country because the way things are going, we're on a fast track. We're on a suicide track. People can't stay in agriculture. They're always behind. They all have loans. All these other industries are subsidized, and agriculture has to pay full retail, and they only get paid wholesale. We have got to protect the land, got to protect farmers and ranch. And so we really talked about, you know, how important it is in Western Montana on these federal lands. And, you know, we talked about saturated fats and the environmental movement and how important it is, logging and ranching. They really like regenerative ag, and we've shared with them, you know, in Montana, regenerative ag includes grazing federal lands. And they, you know, that was a lengthy part of the conversation. So it was fun to have a presidential candidate, a team, say, you know, where's the red tape? How do we help? We need to get people in agriculture, inside the USDA, making decisions instead of bureaucrats. It was a good conversation to have for Montana, and we really enjoyed it, took advantage of the opportunity, and we're trying to help all of our customers and help the industry the best we can with our business.
All right, Brian Massard, Reminisce Angus, great to have you as always. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thanks for having me, Aaron. See ya.
All right. See you later. Yep. All right. All right. And then let's see. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we'll take your phone calls as John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, joins us in the house. Right now in the house, we've got Yellowstone County District Judge Jessica Fair with us. Judge, good to see you. Thanks for popping into the studios this morning.
Good to see you, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
So you must have gotten some feedback. I shared a story last week. The California craziness is now coming to Montana. A liberal judge in Yellowstone County is trying to place a man in the Montana Women's Prison in Billings, Montana. I imagine you must have. I know you can't talk about the details of pending cases, but I'd imagine you got some reaction when that story was shared.
I did. And what really made me laugh, Aaron, was that the first person to call was my friend Mark Morse, who's sitting with me, or Commissioner Morse for Yellowstone County. Mark and I have known each other over 20 years when he was a federal agent and I was a federal prosecutor. Tried my first case together in Butte in front of Judge Malloy. And then the second call was from my mom, who is a follower and watches the show, listens to the show, follows your webpage, and said, "Who's this liberal judge they're talking about?" And so we had a good laugh at home. But yeah, it did catch my attention, Aaron, and I thought, you know, you have been so kind in the past to invite me to speak about initiatives and other things we've done in Yellowstone County that I appreciate the opportunity to really talk about what information judges actually have in front of them, how we cooperate and work with the Department of Corrections, which is the executive branch, and then to answer any questions.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't, because that case is still pending, I can't talk about the details of that case, but I think I can talk in kind of broader context, maybe what information I had at the time, anytime I'm sentencing someone.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, well, and I mentioned this on the air last week when I first saw this story, because I see this story, KTVQ television had this story all about a woman who committed this, you know, this gun crime inside, you know, shoots a gun in a hospital in Billings, Montana. She, her, all this story about this. It's not a woman. It's a man who identifies as a woman. And so, first up, I think it's a sad commentary on the state of our news media right now, where they can write an entire story about a man, but yet lead people to falsely believe that this is a woman. No, this is a man that could potentially be housed with these female inmates in our Montana women's prison. I know you can't talk about this case in particular, But just in general, I definitely want to get your thoughts on why a judge would think that a man could be placed inside of a women's prison. I'm hearing the music. We got our quick Fox News update and then more with the judge here right after this Fox News update here in 60 seconds. So stand by. But yeah, you can see this story on our Montana Talks website, and had a great chat on yesterday's show about this very topic as well.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Deliberations resume at Hunter Biden's federal gun trial in Wilmington, Delaware. They got started behind closed doors for about an hour yesterday.
Jurors have to decide if Hunter Biden lied on a gun form in 2018 when he said that he was not addicted to drugs. They say that he committed three different felonies. Two of those felonies deal with false statements. One deals with possession of that gun in 2018.
Fox's David Spund, the vice president of Malawi in southeastern Africa, is killed in a plane crash.
Solos Chilima is among 10 people dead after their plane came down in the country's mountainous north. President Lazarus Chakwera made the announcement, adding there were no survivors. It took more than a day for 600 rescue workers to find the wreckage.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Stocks are lower to start the day on Wall Street. America's listening to Fox News.
All right, Yellowstone County District Judge Jessica Fair in the house with us. Yeah, Judge, when I mentioned this story last week, I said, you know, I said I've always liked Judge Fair, very nice judge. Haven't agreed with necessarily some of your bigger rulings, but I've at least known you for several years. You and I, actually, I think you were a student government president at the University of Montana back in the day. I had a fun tenure on the student government there as well. I ran into Jason Thielman, the longtime chief of staff to Senator Steve Daines. He was an ASUM president once upon a time as well. You were appointed to the bench by Democrat Governor Steve Bullock initially, but it sounds like you want to push back on this idea that somehow you're not a left-leaning judge. I went back and looked at some of your rulings. You overturned a Montana law regarding ballot harvesting, efforts to rein in ballot harvesting. That your ruling in that case was later used by District Judge Mike Moses, this corrupt liberal judge, who then eventually overturned another effort to rein in ballot harvesting. You declined to take a case regarding the topic of abortion. So I guess tell us why you would push back on this idea that you're not a left-leaning judge if you were put on the bench by former Democrat Governor Steve Bullock.
So I know this is a crazy concept, but I think that of the candidates that Governor Bullock had, and part of it is timing. So we had an open seat that was the seat that Judge Harris was appointed to. I was one of three final candidates for that and interviewed with Governor Bullock. About 3 weeks later, much to the disappointment of my partners at Moulton Bellingham, where I did civil litigation, defended the city, defended police, there was another opening when Gustafson was appointed to the Supreme Court. So I thought, what the heck? My application's done. Let's give this a whirl. So I threw in for that one as well. So it was myself, Colette Davies, and a young woman named Anna Lucia Pianca. And we all submitted and interviewed with the governor.
Davies is very liberal, of course.
And, you know, and I'm not one to comment on other judges' political leanings, partly because we are supposed to be nonpartisan so that whoever walks into my courtroom understands I'm going to look at the facts and I'm going to apply the law. And I don't care who you donated to. I don't care whose yard sign is in your front yard. I don't care if you're a member of the legislature or you're an active member of politics. I want you to get a fair ruling in my courtroom. So back to the story. I interviewed with Governor Bullock, and I recall saying to him, you need to pick the best candidate for Yellowstone County. It doesn't matter what my political background is. It doesn't matter that I was in the Federalist Society in college. It doesn't matter that Governor Roscoe appointed me to the Board of Regents. You need to pick the best candidate, and I'm the best candidate. And so I know I'm pushing back, but I'm saying I don't think he appointed me because of my political leanings. I think at that time I was the most qualified candidate for Yellowstone County.
Why did one of the questions I have, which I know some other folks have, which is why did so many of these state legislature cases involving state legislation, why did they go to Judge Mike Moses? What is going on in the Yellowstone County court system that every single one of these political cases goes to this partisan left-wing, went to this partisan left-wing Judge Mike Moses? And so why aren't some of the other judges taking on these cases? And so why did you not take on that abortion case, for example? We got to take another quick break, and then we'll have much more time.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Yeah, Judge Fair, thanks again for joining us here. So before we get into kind of more of the, you know, placing a man in the women's prison conversation, you know, one of the more frustrating things, I think, for a lot of Montanans is just this tremendous bias we've seen in our court system at the district level oftentimes, and more importantly, at the Montana Supreme Court level. But it's just one thing that's really crazy to a lot of us is how come all of these big legislative issue cases wound up in front of one judge, this former left-wing biased partisan judge, Mike Moses, and it just makes people wonder, wow, what is going on here? How come these cases aren't going to other judges? And it just seems like the whole system is rigged to overturn the laws that we, the people, put on the books. And it seems like we have a corrupt judicial system, which is just doing whatever they want to do oftentimes. Any thoughts on that? And in particular, you know, one of the questions I threw out is, for example, you had the opportunity to have an abortion case before your court. You declined to take on that case. And then I think it went to a liberal judge who, of course, gave Planned Parenthood everything they wanted. So there's a lot of frustration with our court system out there.
So I think, Aaron, part of it is understanding that, and there's been a lot of talk about this in the media, judges, we operate under a specific judicial code of conduct. And that really is what guides us in how we act, when we can act, and what we should be doing. One of the most important of those is if a case is assigned to you, and based on the topic, the litigants, the attorneys, whatever it is, if you look at that case and you determine that there is either an appearance, a potential for an appearance of a bias, or an actual bias, you have to recuse yourself. So if because of some involvement, an example would be, I participated in the fundraising and the construction of the new St. Francis Elementary School on Colton Boulevard. So if a lawsuit was filed against one of the contractors in that building, which it wasn't because it's a beautiful school, we're very blessed, I would not want to sit on that case, right? Because I had actual knowledge of how that was done. That's a perceived bias. So I have to step off. So that's one way that judges can get removed, is to say, there is something about me where I cannot be unbiased in this case. I cannot set aside either my own personal experience or my personal beliefs. And so you do that in order to ensure that the parties do have an unbiased judge. Another thing that happens, and this goes way back to the Copper Barons of Butte. So talk about corrupt politicians. Back then, it was like bags of money being handed to judges to get the decision you wanted, right?
Now it's just Planned Parenthood funding the campaign if you're a Montana Supreme Court justice, or this district judge in Helena who had a 100% Planned Parenthood voting record when he was in the state legislature, but somehow did not recuse himself from abortion cases in Helena. But I digress.
Well, okay, let me refocus you really quick. So the issue with that is, so you could be a party to a case and you could say, you know what? For any reason, this is the law in Montana. For any reason, it can be no reason. It can be that you don't like my hair color. It can be that your kid beat up my kid. Whatever reason, you can, for $100, every party in every case can bump the judge for $100. So what can happen is if you have a case, like some of these huge cases that involve constitutional issues, legislative action, if you have 10 plaintiffs and you have 10 defendants, each one of those parties has the ability to bump the judge. And so when you look at the roster of the cases, sometimes what will happen is it's counsel. It's the parties bumping these judges. So that can happen sometimes. So those are the two ways that judges come off cases. One, we remove ourselves because of a perceived bias or an actual bias. Two, the parties can bump us. And we never know why. Sometimes my feelings get a little hurt. It's like, why'd you bump me? I thought we were good. But but that's the other way it can happen. So sometimes that's what happens. And then where it goes is determined by a random system through the clerk of court's office in Yellowstone County. So that's Terry Halpin. I have nothing to do with that.
So to the case at hand here, here was my headline. Let's see, when did this got published? Probably June 4th is when this initially got published. Billings judge wants to place violent man in Montana women's prison. Now, I know you can't talk about this case in particular. Here was my point, though, is that in California, they passed a law that said, yep, we want to allow men into women's prisons. And boom, miraculously, hundreds of men now identify as women, and they're being placed in women's prisons. And oh, the rape and the sexual assaults and the violence against women has skyrocketed in the state of California. Montana has not passed a law overturning decades and decades of tradition and saying, we want to allow men who identify as women into the women's prisons. So in another hypothetical case, what would allow a judge to give even the recommendation that a man be placed in the women's prison?
So part of it is the information a judge has at sentencing. And some of that is sealed information. And so we get what's called a pre-sentence investigation report. That's provided by the Probation and Parole Office, which is a division of the Department of Corrections, so the executive branch. That report, in the state system, they're usually 10 pages. Federal system, they're like 30. I miss the federal PSIs. State system, they tell us biographical information, criminal history, little bit of mental health history. They do some testing and some scoring, and then it's the conditions they're going to have when they're in the community. It could include medical information. Right. So there could be medical information in there. If I had a defendant who is in heart failure, is not expected to make it very long, that's information that's important for me as to where I'm going to designate them. Right. The other important
because
part,
whether somebody is transgender or this or that, we do have an obligation to provide them appropriate medical care. Regardless of where they end up getting placed, we have an obligation to provide them medical care, you know, if they're transgender, et cetera. So are you telling me then that, because you have to rule based off of the information you have in front of you, are you telling me that the State Department of Corrections and Probation and Parole did not give you accurate information that this was actually a biological male instead of a woman?
What I'm saying is that there can be medical information provided to the court that a court can then not generally share with the public because it is protected health information, which could inform the decision. I think the other important piece is to remember, I don't make a decision as to designation. I don't tell the Department of Corrections where somebody goes. It's kind of an open joke among judges that we can make a recommendation, but DOC does whatever it wants. So the way it works is there's a placement committee within the Department of Corrections. Once I sentence someone, and when I sentence someone, I'm sentencing them for punishment, for restitution, for rehabilitation. That's what's going on in my head. I don't care if you are male, a female. I don't care what color you are. None of that factors into my judgment. In the case that we keep talking about and dancing around, I jumped everyone's recommendations and sentenced the defendant to a higher sentence than anyone had recommended based on my concerns. Where a defendant goes is determined by Department of Corrections.
So are you saying Department of Corrections wanted this biological male to be placed in the women's prison, or was that just your recommendation based on the medical material you had? Hypothetical scenario.
So sometimes I get a recommendation from Department of Corrections. Sometimes a person from the Department of Corrections will come to my sentencing and will testify and say, we don't make a determination as to where they go until judgment is issued. So I sentence you, Aaron, right? You know, traffic violations, you're going to prison. That's what I say. I lose jurisdiction of you the minute that I pronounce sentence, and it goes to Department of Corrections.
Has any other judge in Montana history ever recommended that a man be placed in a women's prison?
I have no idea.
Because you may be the first.
You know, I might be. But at the end of the day, my decisions are informed by recommendations from Department of Corrections. And if Department of Corrections decides that's not the best placement for that person, so then what happens is I sentence them, they go to Department of Corrections custody, right? Even if they're still being held at YCDF, they go to Department of Corrections custody. Department of Corrections then has a placement committee. Placement committee then gets way more information than I did. They get all the medical records. They get the jail records. They get individual investigators that can go out and interview the person. And then they make the determination as to where the person should go.
So from my standpoint, regardless of what this man did to himself, or any man, hypothetically speaking, does to himself to alter his physicality, biologically, there is still a difference between biological males and biological females. And I think why people are so concerned at this recommendation is that these women, regardless of what they did to land themselves behind bars, are still deserving of our protection. 30 to 50%, I don't have the number in front of me right now, 30% of these women that are incarcerated in America suffered previous sexual assault. And now they're going to be re-traumatized by a biological male in that prison with them. Even if he chopped off his you-know-what, he could still harm them physically or threaten them sexually or re-traumatize them. Do you see where people are concerned?
I absolutely see the concern, Aaron. I absolutely do. And I take it very seriously. And I know Department of Corrections does. And so that's why they have this placement committee that makes these decisions, right? So they're going to take into account, where was this person, you know, where was the defendant housed prior to the time that they were transferred to Department of Corrections custody? Were they housed in a men's unit or a women's unit? They're going to take into account medical records. They're going to take into account interviews with the individual and interviews with the YCDF staff. And so that's why we use this placement committee through the Department of Corrections, because they have so much more information and they're going to make the right decision for the correctional
institution.
And then
the other question I have is, well, what law did you use to justify recommending that a man be placed in a women's facility? We got to take another quick break. Stand by.
No matter what you're looking for in a non-alcoholic beer, there's only one name that has it all. Athletic Brewing Co. Full flavor? It's athletic. Huge variety? It's athletic. Award-winning styles you can get online, at the bar, or the grocery store? It's athletic. In fact, when it comes to amazing non-alcoholic beer, there's no question. It's athletic. Ask for it and find out. Go to askforathletic.com to find your closest retailer today. Near beer.
Fox News commentary.
Nearly 10,000 fast food workers are out of a job thanks to California's wage hike. Way to go, Gavin. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Every Monday and Friday, Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
In today's edition of No Duh News, according to the California Business and Industrial Alliance, nearly 10,000 jobs have been cut across fast food restaurants since Governor Newsom signed AB 1228 into law last year. Democrats across California, including the dumpster fire overlord himself, Gavin Newsom, hailed the $20 minimum wage hike for fast food workers as a win for income equality and quality of life. But looks like they were wrong as usual. What good is a so-called livable wage hike if it leads to thousands being laid off entirely? Not only do these artificial wage hikes via government fiat lead to lost jobs, they also contribute to expenses being passed off on the consumer. Everything the government meddles with in the private sector seems to backfire, and backfire most on the people the government intended to help. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Cutting back on fossil fuel demand and getting more energy from non-carbon emitting sources is hard. Some countries are doing it better than others, and some, like China and India, aren't doing it at all. But to the extent we succeed in this green energy transition, as it's known, we actually make the job harder. Because as we lower demand for things like coal and crude oil, we make those carbon-dense sources of energy cheaper. That in turn makes it more expensive to plow ahead with new investment in green energy production, since the difference in cost widens. For countries that are sitting out the entire transition, and there are many, it's a bit of a windfall, letting them spend less and produce more emissions as we pay handsomely to reduce our own. This would be greatly, but not totally, alleviated if we pursued a more sensible strategy of emission reductions, namely a tax on carbon. Instead, we toe a politically convenient line of trying to regulate and control something that economics is making more attractive with each new edict. I'm Patrick Barkin.
LUMEDeodorant.com.
Brought to you from the Montana Hot Spring Spas, home of the only saltwater hot tub in Montana studios.
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, well, I'll see if we can sneak in a couple of quick phone calls here. We're down to just a few minutes left, and we just had a couple phone calls come in. Judge Jessica Fair, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sticking around. Yeah, that was kind of the one other big question I had, is what law can be used to guide whether or not, Because my assumption was, well, they might say, well, Joe Biden is trying to say that men need to be allowed into women's prison, because Joe Biden is trying to say that. He is going around the law to say that. But as Matt Sharp, senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, spelled out yesterday, no, there is nothing in the law. In fact, Florida is not following Biden's guidance and is facing no repercussions whatsoever. They are not putting men in women's prisons. But on top of that, he also talked about the Prison Rape Elimination Act and how there are laws on the books specifically designed, federal law, signed into law, passed by Congress, signed by the president, to protect women and men from, you know, sexual violence in the prisons. And so the argument is that placing a man in a woman's prison puts women at more risk there. So I guess what law would be used to guide a judge in a hypothetical situation of putting a transgender person in the opposite sex prison?
So you're right. There's nothing in Montana. Thank goodness. This is a decision that needs to be made based on an individual factual analysis, just like every single defendant that the Department of Corrections places, right? They have to make a decision whether the person needs treatment, whether the person needs mental health treatment, whether this person just needs to go to a prison and sit it out. They make that decision based on their placement committee's evaluation of the individuals. And I think this issue is appropriately placed there with that committee that has the additional information. I give them the time. I say, I want this person to sit for 20 years, right? Then they figure out within that 20 years and within that judge's, the information the judge had at the time of sentencing, here's where we think this person should go. And then Department of Corrections makes that decision. But no, I think Montana's right in line with Florida. I don't think we're doing anything different under the Gianforte administration than DeSantis is doing. And that is to say, these are decisions that are made by the people that have the information. And in this case, that's the Department of Corrections Placement Committee. They have way more information than I do.
So judges can't overturn a DOC placement recommendation?
No, I will make, sometimes I say I want someone to go to DOC, and then I'll get a letter from Department of Corrections that'll say, eh, we overrode you and we're sending him to the prison.
But you could give your own recommendation. You don't need to follow what DOC is necessary. Eventually, DOC will make the decision, but you can give whatever recommendation you want.
Yeah, and I think that plays, I hope it plays. I'm not sure if it does, but I hope it plays into their decision.
I want to, let's go. Tim in Billings, did you have a quick question or comment?
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Ms. Fair. Just a quick question. Well, first a statement and then a question. I'm glad that you said that judges are supposed to be nonpartisan, because I think anybody with eyes can see that that's absolutely not the case. Judges are partisan, and it's human nature. So, I mean, we might as well accept it that judges try to do their best to be nonpartisan, but they are partisan because they're human and they have biases. And would you support and accept any sort of legislation or policy change to where judgeships should be partisan races?
Allow for partisan qualifier in judicial races. Yeah, any thoughts on that, Judge Fair?
So my concern with that has always been that when I have litigants, and so the important part is I don't just do criminal cases, right? So I also do divorces, parenting plans, civil litigation. We do civil commitments for folks that need to go to Warm Springs. We do all kinds of different things. And so when I have a litigant walk into my courtroom, I don't want it to turn into, I know you voted for Trump, and so I'm going to bump you. To me, that seems like it would create undue shifting of the caseloads, honestly. If there's eight of us and four have been identified as...
So it would create another layer of potential conflict of interest. Interesting. I know I've only got about 20, 30 seconds to go. Tom in Billings, we ran out of time, but I think he was going to say that he believes you are legislating from the bench was kind of the message he relayed to Travis. Anything you want to share there? Thanks again for your time this morning.
Yeah, absolutely not. That's not my job. I stay in my lane. I know my lane. I love the law. My role is to interpret the law as set forth by the legislature. I look at legislative history all the time. I think Helena is doing a great job, and I want them to continue to do their job, and I'll continue to do